Over a century has passed since he performed his nefarious deeds and shocked the world, but the identity of Jack the Ripper remains a mystery. Here to discuss the case is Talking History's Eileen Dugan.
Before the Son of Sam, before the Hillside Strangler, there was Jack the Ripper. Jack the Ripper has become synonymous with Victorian England, as familiar to us as the London fog. His grisly murders horrified Londoners of his day, and his legend lives on, most notably as a character in over a dozen movies set in such diverse times and places as 1920s Germany, 1980s San Francisco, and a contemporary rave party. But ironically, this most famous of all serial killers is also the most mysterious. Over a century after his rampage, there is still debate about his identity and his motive. Joining us today to discuss the enduring mystery of Jack the Ripper is Dr. William Rubenstein, Professor of History at the University of Wales in Aberystwyth and Fellow of the Royal Historical Society. A graduate of Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Rubenstein is a specialist in modern British history and Jewish history. Welcome, Dr. Rubenstein.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Most people, when they think about Jack the Ripper, think that he murdered at least a dozen people, men and women, over a number of years. But what really was the scope of his spree?
Well, the scope is much narrower than that. He murdered five prostitutes in London between August and November 1888. But he brutally murdered them with incredible brutality. There are actually photographs of the corpses, which are available in certain books about Jack the Ripper, which even now, with everything that's happened since 1888, are deeply shocking. They really are quite horrifying. But you're quite right to say that there was no murder spree of endless numbers of victims over years or anything like that.
And what was the basic pattern of these murders?
Every few weeks, a prostitute would be found murdered in the early hours of the morning, always on a weekend, Friday night, Saturday night, or Sunday night. And the killer would escape almost magically. And he wasn't caught at the time. And to this day, no one knows who he is, or indeed why the murder spree ended almost as quickly as it began in November 1888. They stop at that time, and that's the end of it.
And why was the killer called Jack the Ripper?
It derives from a letter sent to the newspaper, which historians have been arguing about ever since, which was signed Jack the Ripper, and said that I am responsible for this, and I will be murdering somebody else a few nights later, and I've eaten the organs of my victims, and I signed it Jack the Ripper, and there were several other letters like that. The name Jack the Ripper was unknown before that, and in all likelihood, if that name had not been used, it's such a colorful and memorable name, these murders would not be remembered now, certainly not to the same extent.
Why did these murders in particular strike so much fear in the Londoners?
Well, late Victorian London, contrary to popular belief, was not a particularly violent place. It is not like an American slum now. In the year before the Jack the Ripper murders, in 1887, there were only 80 murders in London, which had 4 million people. And in fact, there was no murder at all in Whitechapel, which is the district in the East End where the murders took place. Obviously, there were innumerable assaults, burglaries, robberies, and everything else, but murders themselves, and particularly very brutal ones, were extremely rare in Britain, as indeed they are today. I mean, the statistics of killings in Britain are much lower than in the United States. In fact, almost unbelievably lower. It was this combination of five murders and the fact that the person wasn't caught, the incredible brutality of it, and the fact, because of the letters, that he seemed to be thumbing his nose at the police, that caught the public imagination. And of course, people were going in genuine fear. They didn't know when this guy was going to strike next.
And did the fact that the victims were prostitutes also feed into this fear?
Well, of course, London in those days, and indeed probably every Western city, but London is renowned for this, was simply overrun with prostitutes. There were unbelievable numbers of them. In fact, the police in 1888 in the Whitechapel district in the East End were asked how many prostitutes there were in your district and who were potentially at risk. And they said that there were 1,200 prostitutes known to us. Now, women, of course, in those days had no job opportunities. There's the Victorian thing about fallen women and all of that. And many of these women were really very, very wretched conditions. They were alcoholics, they were in very poor health, and so on. But those were the ones who were principally at risk. No one knows, since no one knows who Jack the Ripper is, why he murdered prostitutes, or why he murdered these five in particular, or why he didn't murder anyone else. And that's, of course, part of the mystery.
How did the press cover the murders?
Well, I mean, it was the top talking point of the day in the entire British press, and indeed around the world. There were extensive reports in the American newspapers at the time, almost at once. I think it caught the world's imagination. There had never been anything like this in Victorian Britain. There had never been a serial killer before that.
So did they sensationalize the murders?
Well, newspapers in those days were not tabloid. I mean, there were no tabloid newspapers as yet. They came about 10 years later. And the newspapers were these old-fashioned, very elaborate, extremely lengthy reports. And insofar as they could sensationalize it, they did. But there was very little that they could do. I mean, they weren't illustrated, or there were no photographs in them.
Mm-hmm. And how did they describe the victims?
Well, as prostitutes, they were fairly straightforward. They just simply described them as. I don't think there was any moralizing, if that's what you seem to be implying about their profession. No, I don't think so. It was very matter of fact. I don't think that tone was in there at all, or that they got what they deserved, or that they should. You know, they were. If they, decent women wouldn't be there, or anything like that. No, there was nothing like that. There was universal horror at the brutality of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, prostitution was accepted as a way of life in late Victorian Britain, even though nobody talked about it. In the West End of London, where the rich lived, there were probably even more prostitutes than in the East End. I mean, it was a fact of life. All foreign visitors to London at the time remarked at just how many there were and how upfront they were.
So the interest that was generated by the press, of course, has been spun into something which you call ripperology. And
right.
How would you describe ripperology?
Well, of course, the Jack the Ripper case was famous throughout the 20th century. But I think I'm right in saying that it's only in the last 40 years, oddly enough, that it's become, strangely enough, become an almost cottage industry. In fact, more than a cottage industry. And the name ripperologist is not mine. It's the name which is commonly used to describe the amateur historians who study the case or take an interest in it. In fact, the name of the monthly or bi-monthly magazine published in Britain about the Jack the Ripper case is called The Ripperologist. And that is the name commonly given to the amateur historians and detectives, as it were, who are studying this. And for some reason in the last 40 years, dozens, possibly hundreds of people have taken an interest in this case, all with the aim, I suppose, of trying to determine who Jack the Ripper was, which still remains unknown. I mean, no one knows who Jack the Ripper was, which is the case's central fascination. I think almost everyone who comes to study it thinks that he or she can find the breakthrough clue or put together the evidence in a particular way that will allow us to identify who actually was Jack the Ripper.
And they go into all the minutiae of the case, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, every aspect of it has been poured over time and time again. I mean, one of the more interesting things from the social historical viewpoint is that we probably know more about the life of the five prostitutes who were murdered than any other working-class women in Victorian England, because their lives have been, you know, from all the documents, anyone who knew them, anything that can be traced about them in their hometown, et cetera, have been looked at by dozens of people. And we build up a fairly full biography of the lives of these poor women, which really exceeds that normally given to, you know, almost anyone else in late Victorian society. I think the idea there is to see if they had any links in common. Were they friends, or did they have some commonality which might point to who murdered them? And as far as we know, they had nothing whatever in common and didn't know each other. They were just chosen randomly.
So let's get to the suspects.
Right.
Whom did Scotland Yard suspect at the time?
Well, they suspected a lot of people, and again, I must emphasize, they never made an arrest. They interviewed a lot of people, and the Ripper case was closed a few years later, and they just concluded that the Ripper had disappeared or died or left the country or something, and that was it. Now, modern knowledge of whom Scotland Yard thought was Jack the Ripper dates from 1959, when what's called the McNaughton Memorandum was made public. William McNaughton was the head of Scotland Yard some years after the Jack the Ripper case. He was then actually there at the time of the Jack the Ripper case, but joined shortly afterwards. And he died in the 1930s. And in 1959, his daughter made public a document that he had written in his lifetime, which was unknown until then, which said that at the time, Scotland Yard suspected three men of being Jack the Ripper. One was a barrister named Montague Druitt, who committed suicide just after the Jack the Ripper case. The second was an East End Jew named Kosminski, an immigrant. And the third was a Russian con man named Ostro. And so historians started to investigate this and see what, if any of them could be linked to Jack the Ripper. And for many years, Druitt, who was a very respectable barrister who mysteriously committed suicide just a month or two after the Ripper case, was the leading suspect. And there's a good deal of evidence that he might have been. But a great deal about his life is quite mysterious. The problem with all of these is, first of all, they can't all be true. I mean, they weren't all Jack the Ripper. Two of the three have to be wrong, at least. But the thing is, in the 40 years since the McNaughton memorandum has been made public, there's been no smoking gun. There's no evidence to show that any of these people is Jack the Ripper. Now, since that time, endless numbers of people have been named by either seriously or unseriously as Jack the Ripper, including the most outlandish names one can think of in late Victorian Britain. And there are now probably about 15 to 20 leading suspects, and one could go down a long list of them.
Another theory that's been popularized by, for example, the movie Murder by Decree suggests that the Freemasons and British royalty were involved in Jack the Ripper. I mean, what is the argument of this theory? What do you think of it?
First of all, this is nonsense. But secondly, it dates from the late 1960s when a book came out suggesting that the Duke of Clarence, who was the eldest son of Edward VII, the man who became Edward VII, and who died in 1892, was Jack the Ripper, and that he was somehow in league with Freemasons to kill these women. Now, this was made... There are several books which have been advanced this theory, which have no basis in fact whatsoever. I mean, they're just baloney. There's not a shred of evidence that any member of the royal family set eyes on any of the women who were killed or had the slightest motive for doing it. I mean, the theory suggested is that one of the Ripper victims was blackmailing the Duke of Clarence because of an affair. I mean, this doesn't explain why he, first of all, polished off four other women at the same time or anything else. The Freemasons are just nonsense. It's just bigotry. I mean, the theory is just nonsensical, in my opinion.
So who, in your opinion, is most likely to have been Jack the Ripper?
My own view is that Jack the Ripper was probably a man named James Maybrick, who was the apparent author of a diary that came to light in 1992. Now, a diary that appears after a century with no provenance is obviously going to be attacked. It's probably fraudulent. And in fact, a lot of people don't think it's Maybrick for that reason. But there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that Maybrick was Jack the Ripper. Maybrick was a Liverpool cotton broker who had the odd distinction of being murdered by his wife a few months later, Mrs. Maybrick, who was sentenced to death and reprieved and spent 15 years in jail. And Mrs. Maybrick's, the Florence Maybrick case is actually one of the most famous cases in its own right in late Victorian Britain. Now, there was nothing whatever to link James Maybrick, the cotton broker from Liverpool, with Jack the Ripper until this diary mysteriously came to light in 1992, more than a century later. But since then, quite a few people now think that Maybrick is almost certainly the man. There's a lot of side evidence and very curious things which seem to support the case.
Such as?
And no one has, I might say, first of all, no one has disproved the diary. I mean, in nearly the 8 years since it's come to light, there's been no one, people have attempted to show that it's a fraud, but no one has. Now, several of the things I point out in an article I wrote in this in a magazine called History Today, there's a letter which appeared in the Liverpool Press at the time of the Ripper cases, which is signed Diego Lawrence. And in my view, Diego is no one knows what that means, and it was pointed out in one of the books on the Maybrick diary. And the man who wrote it says, "I don't know what it means. Does anybody know?" And I think I do. Diego is the name which is assumed to be by many English people to be James in Spanish. And Lawrence, in my opinion, is supposed to rhyme with Florence, that is, with Florence Maybrick. And this is a code for James Maybrick. And there's a lot of other evidence of that sort to suggest that it is probably Maybrick. Now, Maybrick was a drug addict. He was an arsenic addict, of all things. There's no doubt about this, because when the trial of Mrs. Maybrick, the elaborate evidence was given that he was, in fact, an arsenic addict. And what was his motive for murdering these five prostitutes? Well, his wife was having this affair, and he knew about it, and it was apparently a vicarious revenge against his wife when he was under the influence of arsenic addiction, which apparently is not unlike other drugs. It sort of sends you mad. Now, he was weaned off arsenic addiction shortly after the end of the last killing. And in my view, this is very significant. I mean, he ceased having an interest in killing the prostitutes after that. And then he was in turn murdered only a few months later probably by his wife, or possibly by another member of his family. I'm sorry to be so mysterious, but it's a very complicated matter.
Yes, well, the mystery continues, does it not?
It does, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Dr. Rubenstein.
Yes.
We've been talking to Dr. William Rubenstein, Professor of History at the University of Wales.